talk, let's take a moment and cultivate a good motivation. And so let's think that we'll listen attentively, think about what we hear, question it, share what we learn, so that we can deepen our understanding of life and our own mind and how it functions. And especially so that by understanding ourselves and learning ways to become a better person, we can make a positive contribution to society. And in the long term, so that we can become fully awakened Buddhas and have the wisdom, compassion, power, and skillful means to be of great benefit to other living beings. So let's cultivate this long-term motivation and really hold that in our hearts, even as we do the comparatively short action of listening and sharing the teachings this evening. So we're going to talk about self-confidence. And I was thinking, I don't know, how would you even define self-confidence? What is it? We all kind of know what it is. Can you even put it into words? You know, some kind of feeling as if, yes, we can do this. Like that? I'm feeling like, yeah, I can do this, or I can try to do this. So self-confidence is not, I'm going to be the best one, and I'm going to win. That's not self-confidence, that's arrogance. Big difference. Okay? So self-confidence is just a feeling, yeah, I can try this. Now, we'll see what happens. I don't have to be best. And you all get very nervous when I say that. What do you mean? I don't have to be best. Ever since I was a little kid, my parents were saying I had to be best. My teachers were saying I had to be best. Society says I had to be best. I'm neurotic. How can you tell me I don't have to be best? Sure, not true. Yeah? Anybody have any anxiety about having to look good or be better than everybody else? Yeah? Who has some anxiety about that? About 10 of us. Okay. And the rest of you are completely confident and don't care if things turn out well or how what people think of you. How many of you care about what other people think of you? Oh, now some people are beginning to be honest. Yeah. Shravasti Abbey, that where I live, that I really encourage in people, you know, that we be what I call transparent. Yeah. We're okay with what we are, and so we can say that to others. Yeah. We're not trying to put on a face and appear to be something that we're not, in order that people like us and approve of us, so that we can have a good reputation. Because all that stuff drives you crazy, doesn't it? Yeah, it's a real source for tension. Because I was thinking, you know, if I were sitting up here giving the talk and I was worried about what you all think of me, there's no way I could give a talk. You know what I heard one time? That they did kind of a survey of what people are most afraid of, and more people are afraid of public speaking than they are of dying. Isn't that wild? Yeah? But if you give a talk, it doesn't matter whether there's, I don't know how many of us are here this evening, 150, I don't know. But anyway, it doesn't matter whether there's two people or a few hundred people, or in Taiwan, or 2 weeks ago, I gave a talk, there were 15,000. It was only a 2-minute talk. So I made it through, I didn't faint. But, you know, if I'm worried about what you're all thinking about me, well, there's no way I could talk to you, because all the attention would be on me. You know, what do they think about me? Am I adequate? Am I inadequate? What are they going to say about me at the end of the talk? Because they're all going to go outside and talk afterwards. And they might say, oh, it was so boring. You know, but I don't want them to say that. I want them to say, wow, this was the best talk I've ever heard. She's wonderful. Yeah. And if I concentrated on that while I was talking to you, you know, what I would say would be complete nonsense. Because I wouldn't be able to think clearly, because my mind would be too preoccupied about what are they going to think about me, what are they going to say about me. So, before I give a talk, and before I do almost everything in life, I, as much as possible, I pause and I cultivate a good motivation, like we did at the beginning of the session here. And I really try and think, you know, what I want to do. I want it to be truthful and honest. I want to do what is best for whoever it is I'm with. I want to be able to communicate clearly, and I hope that other people understand me according to what I'm meaning. And then especially, you know, I think of this bodhicitta motivation, you know, this aspiration to attain full awakening for the benefit of all living beings. And I think, you know, that I want that to be my long-term basic motivation for what I'm doing. And if I think long term like that, even though I'm thinking about Buddhahood, which is something completely inexpressible and unimaginable, Still, it gives me peace of mind, and it gives me confidence in what I'm doing. Because my motivation, you know, is long-term to be of great benefit to others. And if I'm going to be of great benefit, I need to work on myself. I need to improve myself and get rid of my disturbing emotions and develop my own good qualities. And so that's what I want to do in my life. Yeah. What other people think about me while I'm doing this doesn't really matter. Because I'll tell you a secret, which is not a secret. Which is, whatever you do, somebody's not going to like it. Whatever you do, whoever you are, someone will criticize. Someone will complain. Yeah. It's just, we live in samsara. We live with other living beings who have mental defilements. And we have mental defilements also. Yeah. So, you just know that whatever you do, somebody's not going to like it. And that's okay. It's really okay. Really. It's okay. Yeah. If somebody doesn't like what you're doing, or if somebody doesn't like you, it's okay. It doesn't mean you're a bad person. When people criticize, they're saying more about their state of mind than they are about us. Yeah. Because, you know, our reputation is basically just other people's thoughts. That's all a reputation is, what other people think. Now, if you look at your own mind, how long do you hold a thought? Very long? Or do thoughts whiz by in your mind? Yeah. If you look closely, most of our thoughts just whiz by. So if my reputation is just other people's whizzing by thoughts, it's not really much, is it? It's nothing material. It's just people's thoughts that boom, 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 boom. And you know what? I'm going to tell you another secret that's also not so secret. Is that other people are too busy thinking about themselves to think about us all the time. Yeah? Who do you think about all day long? You spend all day long thinking about what you think about other people? No, you think about yourself all day long, aren't you? I want this, I want that, I don't like this, I don't like that, give me this, get rid of that. So other people are just as self-preoccupied as we are. Do you think they're really going to spend all day thinking about us? Oh, she gave this fantastic talk. So all evening, all day tomorrow, all you're going to think about, all you're going to dream about is this marvelous talk I'm giving and how wonderful I am as a person. Really? Yeah? I don't think you're really going to spend all night and day thinking about that. I'll be fortunate if you remember one idea of what I said. Okay? So what I'm getting at is worrying about what other people think about us really doesn't make much sense. And also, what other people think about us will not give us confidence and should not destroy our confidence either. Why? Because what other people think about us isn't always so reliable. Have you ever done one action and one person's criticized you for it and another person said you're wonderful for it? Same exact action? Yeah. That's happened to me a few times. It's really amazing. I remember some years ago, I was living in a monastic community, and one person came to see me, and she said, I was kind of the director of the community, this was many years ago, and she said, oh, you are so strict the way you keep your precepts. You are so tight, you are so precise. There's no room for flexibility in your mind. Okay. She left. About a half an hour later, another person came and said, you keep your precepts so sloppy. Yeah, you're just unorganized. You don't keep them very well. You need to really tighten up a bit. Okay? Now, if I relied on what other people said about me in order to know who I was, I would be schizophrenic. Because one person just said I was too tight, and the other person just said I was too sloppy. Who's right? You know what? I'm the only one who can tell that. Because whether I'm too tight, whether I'm too sloppy, depends on my mental state. Yeah. So my teachers may have some idea about that. They often know me better than I know myself. But other people can't see that. So I really have to look inside my own heart and say, you know, am I too inflexible or am I too sloppy? And I have to look at myself and how I think and how I behave and make that determination for myself. Yeah. So this whole thing about what other people think about me, it's really not very reliable. And that leads, if we care a lot about what other people think about us, we often lose our self-confidence because we're too dependent on other people to tell us who we are. And if we're good people or bad people. And other people have all sorts of ideas. Some are correct, some are incorrect. But the basic thing is, what do I feel about? How does it look to me when I look inside? Because I'm the only one who really knows my own motivation. And so that's what I have to pay attention to. So that's why I said at the beginning of all the different things that I do, I try and cultivate, you know, that compassionate, altruistic intention of bodhicitta. And then I just do what I need to do and I don't worry about it. Because if my intention is good, chances are things will be okay. Yeah. And if somebody doesn't like what I did or if I made a mistake, because of ignorance, or if some, you know, mental affliction crept into my mind and my bodhicitta evaporated, then when I notice it, then I say, okay, it's good that I'm noticing this, because now I know what I need to work on. Now I know how I can improve myself. So our purpose in life isn't to look good. Yeah. And it's not to be good. We don't have to be good, you know? You look good. I'm so good. I'm so sweet. I'm the sweetest person in the world. You know? That's kind of rubbish, isn't it? Yeah? Do you want to walk around all day like that? Yeah? So I think more of the purpose of our life is to generate compassion and wisdom. And in the process of doing that, we'll make some mistakes. So we learn from our mistakes. Making a mistake is not a huge big deal because we all make mistakes. It's what we do after we make the mistakes that is important. Do we blame our mistakes on somebody else? Do we feel totally humiliated and crawl into a shell? Or do we just own our mistake and say, I goofed, and, you know, what do I need to learn so that I can try and prevent that same mistake in the future? Yeah. If we do that, then we learn from our mistakes, and our mistakes actually become useful. You know, I was talking one time with a professor who was on the admissions board for a university. Especially he was working in the science department. And so I asked him, I said, how do you evaluate the students that you're going to admit to the science department? You know, what criteria do you use to evaluate them? And he said, I look at what they do after they fail at doing something. Yeah, wow, because if you're in science and you do research, you're going to fail a lot. You know, you're going to have all these different theories and they're not going to pan out in your research. So for him, one of the qualities of the best students was what they do after they fail. Do they cover it up? Do they mix up the data? You know, because you can mix up the data and come out with something else if you're good at statistics. So do you do that? Do you blame somebody else? Do you get so discouraged that you don't try again? Or do you learn from the experience and then go on? And I thought that was quite something, what he said. And I remember later on, my niece was applying for university and she had to write about herself. They asked her to write an essay. And you know, about her qualities. So she was going to write about all of her good qualities. And I suggested that she also write about her faults. And she nearly slugged me. Not really, you know, she wasn't violent. But she and her mom, my sister-in-law, were so mad at me. How dare you suggest that she talk about her faults? First of all, she doesn't have any. Second of all, even if she did, you don't tell that to the admission committee. You know? And I was thinking, you know, because lots of people come to the Abbey, lots of people tell me different things. And the people who present themselves to me as if they're perfectly together people, no problems, no insecurity, only confident going ahead in their life, then I know something's really wrong. You know? Yeah. the people who just sit there and cry and say, I can't do anything right. That also, something's wrong. But the people who are kind of in the middle and say, you know, I do this, but there's still this aspect of my life that's kind of unclear that I really need to work on. You know, people who can say that out loud, then I think, oh, this person is going to be able to learn well. So you're all probably thinking that I'm crazy, because I know that you're all kind of understand my niece, because when you fill out job applications, you have only good qualities, don't you? Yeah? And even if you don't know something, this is how I know when somebody doesn't know something. I'm a quick learner. That's what I say. Yeah? And yeah, I learn things very quickly. Then I know, oh, they don't know. Yeah. And they still want to look good. So some people don't even say, I'm a quick learner. They just say, oh yes, I know that, even when they don't. And then they get the job, and then what happens when you get the job and you don't know what you said you did? Problems, isn't it? So I always look, you know, for people. I look for truthfulness in people and the ability to assess themselves in a realistic way, to notice their good qualities without getting proud, and to notice their faults without discouragement. And then I think that, you know, then that's somebody that can learn. It can go ahead. Okay, so relying on other people for self-confidence, kind of a dead end. That's not going to work so well. Okay. Although, if we're going to rely on anybody for self-confidence, we should rely on wise people. Okay? If we're going to listen to the feedback of anybody, we should listen to the feedback of wise people. Okay. So who's a wise person? Huh? You really need to think about this. What does it mean to be a wise person? The Buddha is a wise person. Yeah. And so, sometimes I think, you know, what would the Buddha think about what I'm doing right now? And Buddha might say, yeah, you're giving it a good try, good. Or he might say, kiddo, you better be careful. I rely on the feedback from my teachers, too. I find that quite helpful. Yeah, because my teachers are wise. But people who are attached to me, I don't rely on their feedback so much. Because when somebody is attached to us, then they exaggerate our good qualities. Yeah? And similarly, somebody who is very negative towards me, I don't put a lot of weight in that because they're exaggerating my bad qualities. Although it could be helpful to learn some of my bad qualities for the times that I think, like my niece, that I don't have any. Yeah, always helpful to have a few people knock you down. So often, when we are trying to establish self-confidence, like I've been saying, we rely on external factors. You know, one of them is what other people think, which isn't so reliable. Another thing, that we rely on for self-confidence is comparing ourselves to other people over certain qualities. But the qualities that we often choose to compare ourselves to other people are qualities that are transient, that we're not going to have long. So, for example, sometimes we get, we try, I'm not sure we actually get it, but we try to get self-confidence by how we look. Okay? So, we try and look good. So you've got to comb your hair a certain way. Unless the style is not to comb your hair, in which case you have to go like this and make sure it's messy, because that's the style. Then you have to wear certain clothes according to the image that you want to project to other people. Don't you? You go to work, don't you? Wear certain clothes to project an image. So you have to wear those clothes a certain way. You have to have a certain car. Yeah. You have to have certain hobbies. And you have to watch all the latest movies so that you can talk about them with your colleagues. Yeah. At least in the States, you do. What about here? You have to watch all the latest movies. People talk about them at work. Yes? No? Yes? A little bit?
Or some news. Yeah. Some hot news.
Huh?
Some news in the...
Yeah, some new entertainment or something. Yeah. In the States, we just talk about Donald Trump. He's our entertainer. Yeah, always coming up with some outrageous thing. Yeah, never a dull moment. But we're always, you know, we want to project the image. So we want to look young and we want to look good, don't we? Yeah. So you don't want to be too thin and you don't want to be too fat. But who here feels comfortable in their body and how you look is good enough? My guess is that hardly any of us feel that we look good enough. Because we look at the figures in the magazines and the movies and we say, I don't look like them. What's wrong with me? Yeah. You see all the posters, you know, in the MRT station. These people have completely smooth, clear complexions. Every hair is in place. And they're all smiling. But the pictures are so phony. I saw one picture of, you know, it's somebody playing tennis. And she has a purse with her. Who goes and plays tennis with a purse on their shoulder? Now, I thought this picture is funny. Then there's the other picture. You might have seen it outside one of the banks of some woman. We'll help you save for your dream retirement. And, you know, it looks like this beautiful nature scene. Yeah, you know which one I'm talking about. Yeah. And she's an older woman standing there with a camera, I think it is. Yeah. You know, so all of a sudden she's become a photographer in her old age. Yeah. And it's kind of snowy around, but she just has a simple jacket. She's not cold or anything. Yeah. And we look and we say, I don't look like that. What's wrong with me? Yeah. Or you look at the couples, you know, all the advertisements that are trying to make you have more babies, even though we have overpopulation in the world. You know? So all those flyers also in the MRT, you know, of this divinely happy couple. Yeah? They're both of them. She's gorgeous, he's handsome, the baby is stupendous. They're all sitting there smiling, you know, with, you know, kind of their perfect home in the background. And, you know, and you look and you go, oh, my marriage isn't like that. What's wrong with me, you know? And my kid doesn't look like that. My kid throws up in the middle of the night. My baby cries. And then you go, oh, what's wrong with me? Something's wrong. I don't look like those people. Mm-hmm. And then you also see the ads, you know, of these men. You know, it's like, I don't know, 30 degrees outside. And they're wearing suits and ties. You know, I was like, this is crazy. Well, my long sleeve shirts. Yeah, don't you? Yeah, long sleeve shirts. Jacket, tie, you can't breathe. You know, and it's 30 degrees outside. But you're walking along, you know, with your shoes, confident, holding your briefcase. Yeah. Or looking at your smartphone, you know. But, you know, you're one of these professionals, so you have to look at your smartphone in a certain way. Yeah? Or hold it out here. You look at it that way. Not like the rest, you know, the rest of the people who look at their smartphones. So, you know, you try to project a certain image, but then you don't look like any of those people. And you know what? Those models don't even look like themselves, because all the paintings are airbrushed. Yeah. They just forgot to take out her purse when she's playing tennis. Absolutely crazy, you know. Yeah, playing tennis, you know, every hair, perfect place, not sweating, with her matching purse. So, you know, we're relying on external factors. Do I look good? Am I young? Because, you know, everybody's supposed to be young now. Yeah. It's the millennial. The millennials are in. I'm a baby boomer. Yeah, we were in for one time. No, we were the generation for a while. And then, you know, you're only the generation for about 10 years, and then you are over the hill. And there's another generation that comes up, and everybody's paying attention to them, and you're just an old fogey. But you are trying to be young, because that's what society's telling you you need to be. Is young and healthy and energetic and gorgeous and athletic and intelligent and talented and skillful and lovable. And you never say anything wrong. You are perfect Buddha boy or Buddha girl. You know? And it's like, who's like that? No one. Who's trying to become like that? Everyone. If that isn't crazy making, tell me what is. We're all trying to look younger and look better, and we're all in the process of aging. That one's really no secret. Yeah, we're in the process of aging. We're getting more wrinkles. We're getting more gray hair. Or you're getting less hair. Yeah? And their bodies are getting weaker. No one is getting younger and more
attractive.
So if we are valuing ourself and our confidence based on being young and attractive, we're setting ourselves up for big problems because nobody's becoming younger and more attractive. We're all getting older and physically uglier, and you better face it. Yeah? Doesn't matter how much Botox you use. Okay? So what I'm saying is we have to be comfortable with who we are and not dream up some totally unrealistic image of who we should be, compare ourselves to that, and then feel crummy because we aren't like that. But most people that I meet anyway do exactly that. We create a very unrealistic image of who we should be if we were really sharp and successful. And we have that image, and then we look at ourselves, it's like, I don't fit that image. What's wrong with me? Then we lose confidence. But it's ridiculous to lose confidence because all those things we're comparing ourselves to are really inconsequential. Who cares if you're young and beautiful? Now, I know you're all going to say, I care. But really, you know, who cares? I go to talks, give talks in high schools sometimes. And the students look at me, you know, like, are you from Mars? Yeah. And why do you wear those clothes? You know, I haven't seen them in the department store. Yeah. And why don't you have any hair? What's wrong with you? No. Because especially when you're a teenager, but it's not just teenager, it's also you're in your 20s and your 30s and your 40s and your 50s, and even when you're 90, you're trying to look good. Okay. And I tell them, you know, they say, why do you cut your hair? You know, because our hair is one of the things that we use to look good. I know I did before I ordained. Yeah. I spent years growing my hair out. It was down to here. It was beautiful. I had beautiful hair. I never dyed it, you know, but it was brown, it had kind of red highlights in it. It was long and wavy, and it took me forever to grow out. And I was very attached to it, you know. I thought, yeah, I look really good. Huh? You know, all this hair makes you look good. When I finally cut it off, It was really difficult for me to cut my hair because I was very attached to it, very attached to my appearance. But I thought, you know, I'm not too attached, I need to cut it. So I cut it off and I put it on the altar of the dorm room that I was sharing in the monastery because that was my offering to the Buddha of freeing myself from attachment. And one of my roommates came in and looked at the altar and said, ew, put this hair on the altar. And I said, that was my beautiful long hair, don't you know? So the kid, you know, the students are so shocked. You know, when I tell them, you know, I cut my hair off and it feels really good. And I'm not embarrassed. Yeah. Even though sometimes people will come to me. I get interesting remarks, you know, because I have no hair. So sometimes the flight attendants will say, "What do you want to drink, sir?" Sometimes I'm in the woman's bathroom and another woman comes in and goes, and sometimes somebody will come up to me, it's usually a woman, and put their hand on my shoulder and say, "It's okay, dear, after the chemo starts." So I don't get upset with this. I don't feel anger. I mean, because, you know, the people who say that, they're acting with compassion. I mean, they're really extending compassion, and I feel quite touched by that. Every once in a while, somebody on the street will say, "You look really good in that color. That outfit really sits you very well." So, you know, because I don't really care, you know, what people think about me, and what I tell the kids is, you know, if somebody's going to like me, it's not because I'm attractive. No. Because if that was what drew me, what drew other people to me, the fact that I was attractive, then those friendships would not be very good friendships. Because I'm getting older and uglier. And if they only like me because of how I look, it's not really going to be a very good friendship. So I tell the students, I want to be beautiful inside. They all come and look at me. Huh? What do you mean you want to be beautiful inside? Yeah. But I say, you know, if I can have a kind heart, if I can cultivate good qualities, then, you know, people who like me, they have some reason for it, and even if I get older and uglier, I'll still have those friends. So I don't lose my self-confidence according to how I look. Sometimes, you know, people base their self-confidence on their athletic ability. Now they want to be athletes. Does Singapore send people to the Olympics? Yeah? So, you know, they're all very lucky. We're athletes. Look at those muscles, you know? Look at this ability to twist my body and do all these different things. Yeah? But if that's how we get our self-confidence and our self-esteem, that's not going to last very long. Because we only have that kind of athletic ability for a short time in our life. And especially the gymnasts. You know, they're so agile, they can only do it for a few lives, a few years. Money. You made a mistake at work. You spilled the coffee on your first date. What's wrong with me? Something's wrong with me. You know, we're so self-critical. Yeah? Over stupid things, really stupid things. And then we lie to ourselves. We have a precept as Buddhists against lying. But we lie to ourselves all the time. We say, you don't do anything right. And we believe it. But is that true? That we don't do anything right? No, it's not true. There's a lot of things that we know how to do, and we do them well. Or we say to ourselves, you're totally unlovable. Is that one true? Nobody loves you because you're unlovable? Is that one true? Yeah. Sometimes we really believe that one. I'm totally unlovable. Nobody loves me. Yeah. When we think like that, that's really insulting other people. Because there's a lot of people who care about us. There's a lot of people who care about us. And if we say to ourselves, I'm unlovable, it's like saying to those people, you're stupid because you care about me. Yeah, we are lovable. We're not perfect, but we are lovable. Yeah? And surely the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas care about us. What, you think, oh, the Buddha has love for all sentient beings except me. That's making yourself a little bit too important. You know? Yeah. Well, we all have people who love us. And we all have skills. And we have different skills and we have different talents. And isn't that wonderful? That we have different talents and different skills, and that some people are better than us. I'm really happy that people are better than me. Because if I were the best in this world, we would not have food, because I don't know how to grow it. We would not have buildings, because I don't know how to build them. Yeah. We would not have plumbing. Oh, goodness. We wouldn't have electricity. All I know how to do is change a light bulb. Yeah. We wouldn't have computers because I don't understand those. Yeah. All the cars would be broken because I don't know how to fix them. If I were the best one in this world, we would be in really bad shape. So I'm very happy that there's people who are better than me. Yeah, because they do things that keep all of us, keep our society functioning and keep all of us healthy and somewhat happy. Yeah. So I don't have to be the best one. Now you might say, well, you want to be best in your own field. Yeah. So don't you want to be the best Buddhist teacher? Actually, I don't. Because if I were the best Buddhist teacher, again, we're in really bad shape. Yeah? I mean, my teachers are far better than me, and I want them to be better than me. Because if I were the best, there would be nobody for me to learn from. Yeah? So I think even in whatever field that we have, it's good. Other people are better. We can learn more. And who said we have to be best? And anyway, what does best mean? And who decides what is best? Yeah. What does best mean? Yeah. It's a word like perfect. When we say, I want things to be perfect. What in the world does perfect mean? When you really think about it? So then, if things like our looks, even our intelligence, are impermanent, you know, if we live to be 80 or 90, maybe we're like, yeah, my dad had Alzheimer's. He used to be bright, and then he got, you know, with Alzheimer's. Then he thought there were two cities. He lived in a city named Newport Beach. He thought there were two Newport Beaches, one he lived in, and another one that looked exactly the same that he didn't live in. But he was in the one that he didn't live in. He wanted to go back home to the one he lived in. And I loved him anyway. I don't care which Newport Beach he lived in. Whether one was real or one wasn't real. But you know, even our intelligence and our knowledge, it's not always there. So on what basis do we develop self-confidence? From a Buddhist viewpoint, we develop it on the basis that we all have the potential to become a fully awakened Buddha. That we have the what's called the clear light nature of mind, that the basic nature of our consciousness, of our mind, is unpolluted, is free of hindrances, and that that's a quality of our mind that can never be taken away. That's, you know, if you have mind, you have that quality. So if we all have the potential to become fully awakened Buddhas, wow, what more could we want as a basis for self-confidence? Yeah? To become a Buddha? I mean, becoming a Buddha is better than, you know, getting elected as president or being the CEO of a company. Yeah, you think you're going to be happy if you're the CEO of a company? Yeah, you think you're going to be happy? Ask some CEOs. Yeah. So, you know, if we really look inside, we have this pure nature of mind. We have the ability to develop impartial love and compassion for every single living being. We have the capability of realizing the ultimate nature of reality. We have the capability of releasing all of our ignorance, anger, and attachment in such a way that they never appear in our mind again. That's possible to do because we have this Buddha nature. When you think of the qualities of a fully awakened being and how they can really do extensive benefit for others, and then you think, wow, I can become like that. That gives you a stable sense of self-confidence because the Buddha nature is not going to change. It's not going to disappear. Nobody has more of it than you do. Okay. So when we actually have a feeling for our own human potential, and the purity of our own mind, then, wow, you know, we can do anything. We have to create the causes for it. It doesn't mean we can do anything tomorrow. Yeah, I can't start speaking Chinese tomorrow. I wish I could. I'd love to know Mandarin. But I can't start speaking tomorrow because I haven't created the causes and conditions. But if we create the causes and conditions, we can do anything. So that is, having that awareness is a stable basis for us to develop self-confidence. And to know we become Buddhas, and all the Buddhas are equally full of compassion and wisdom. So you don't have to be the best Buddha. You don't have to compete with, you know, Manjushri and Samantabhadra and Medicine Buddha and, you know, so that you can be the best Bodhisattva and then the best Buddha. You know, forget it. Okay. So, what I'd like to do is open it now, maybe for some questions or comments.
You mentioned the example you shared about creating the cause and condition about learning Mandarin and Chinese. In such cases, how do we, if we want to achieve an outcome, how do we want, what type of cause and condition, what do we need to do?
Okay, so if we have certain goals, yeah, then what do we do to attain those goals? The first thing is to look and see, you know, what are the qualities needed to attain those goals? And then how can you create those qualities yourself? Yeah, and so to ask yourself, you know, what are the qualities and what do I need to do to attain those qualities? And sometimes we look at the qualities, like I would love to learn how to speak Mandarin. You know, but I'm 66. I'm not really sure that I can learn in this lifetime. So I would like it, but I would really have to do that, but I'd have to spend the rest of my life going, sure. You know? And there's other things I want to do too. So it's like, okay, creating the causes and conditions to speak Mandarin in this life is a bit beyond me. I'm going to leave that aside, yeah, but I'm going to focus on other things that I really do want to do and create those causes and conditions. Okay.
How do we let go of the approval of people we love very deeply?
Okay, so how do we let go of attachment to the approval of people we love very deeply? Are you talking about parents or?
Parents, teachers, people we care about.
Okay, parents, teachers, people we care about. Just basically the way I said before, that what other people think of us is unreliable. Yeah? And especially, I think, with parents. Parents develop really unrealistic expectations of their kids because they want their kids to have everything they didn't have and be everything they weren't able to be. Yeah? Parents in the audience, do you have that for your kids? You want them to have and be and do everything that you weren't able to have and be and do. And you expect them to be able to do that. And they're just some kid, you know, who got born due to afflictions and karma. Yeah? They didn't sign up to be your, you know, the embodiment of what you wished you had become. So, you know, as parents, you need to release that kind of expectation. And as children, we need to just realize, okay, that's what parents do because that's what parents do. But that doesn't mean that I'm a failure for not being, doing, and having everything my parents wanted me to be, do, and have. I mean, look at me. My parents, you know, this was not what they had in mind for me. Yeah? What I should be by now, you know, according to what my parents wanted, is very different than what I am. But I'm happy with who I am. And you know, if you give your parents time to grow up, they will. Yeah? And after many years, my parents said, okay, this is the way you are, that's good. Because there was no way I could be everything they wanted me to be. No way, it just wasn't the kind of human being I was. Yeah, you're going to have to speak loud so I can hear you.
Your supplier wants to what?
My business partner.
Your partner?
Yes.
Wants to?
Introduce a lobster dish that requires using a live lobster.
Oh.
Yes. I'm not all for it. So, how do I go about
it? You say, because you're partners, so you're equal.
Yes.
And you say, I understand you want to do that, but I feel extremely uncomfortable about having killing live lobsters, and I just feel repulsed by that, and so is it okay with you if we just forget about that idea? Yeah, you just say what you feel. Yeah? Hear everything you're saying. You want to come up closer? You know, I'm old. I am.
Okay. Okay, what should we do if we don't have a self-confidence, but people are surrounding us say that we can do the jobs that has been offered to us?
That we don't have self-wish
us.
What? Have a
job. Yeah.
She was offered a good job, a higher paid job.
But she doesn't have a cell phone.
No, she doesn't have the self-confidence.
Self-confidence.
Yeah, everybody else is saying, you can do it.
You can do it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, are you up for giving it a try? So you care about what they think. or are you really genuinely afraid of inconveniencing them?
It's actually not inconveniencing, but I really, really hate that I cannot
look. No. Yeah. I mean, you can either say, I'm going to give it a try. First of all, let's back up a few steps. Do you want to do that job? Do you want that position? Is it something that you want to do, that you're interested in?
It's just being offered.
No, but are you interested in it? Do you want it?
Not really.
Then if you don't want it, say no. Why should you do it? You know? And you just say, this is not the kind of job that I want to have that would make me feel fulfilled as a human being. You know? I feel I have other talents and capabilities that I would like to use in a different way. And they say, wah, da, 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 da.
Yeah, that's been happening actually.
flattered, I'm very honored, but no. Because, you know, who wants to do a job that you are not going to feel fulfilled doing? No? Even if it's higher status and pays more.
Once in a while, the self-criticism thoughts that come into your mind. I mean, I read your book that you say, it's okay, I'm here. But sometimes you still get that thought.
Which thought is it?
Self-criticism.
Self-criticism. Yeah. So what do? When you get it? You ask yourself, is this true? Yeah? You look at what you're telling yourself. And you say, is this true? What I'm telling myself, is this a fact? And we usually realize that the thoughts we're having when we're having, you know, self-defeating attitude, we realize that they aren't true. Yeah, that we're giving up on ourselves when no one else has given up on us. You know, that thought in my mind is not accurate. I'm not going to believe it. Yeah.
Venerable, I have this question on appreciation. So if someone likes the appreciation of others, does that mean that that person is not giving himself or herself the recognition that he needs?
Say that again.
Okay, if someone needs or likes the appreciation from others, uh-huh. Does that mean that the person is not giving himself or herself the recognition that he himself needs, actually?
Okay. So, you know, sometimes we get quite needy. Yeah? Anybody here get needy? Yeah, we're all emotionally needy, aren't we? It's like, oh, I need some love, I need some appreciation, I need some praise, I need some reputation. I need, you know. I think it was Mother Teresa who she used to say things like, you know, if I feel sad, give me somebody to make happy. Yeah. So kind of along that line, if I feel that I'm emotionally needy, give me someone else to praise. Let me praise others. Let me point out to others their good qualities. Because the thing is, when we feel emotionally needy, all our attention is on ourselves. I need. When we focus on others and we say kind things to others and give other people good feedback, not only do they feel good about it, but we feel good about it. Because it feels really good to encourage other people. It feels really good to point out to other people what they do well and to show your appreciation of them. And it's interesting because when we do that, then we're focusing on others and we're not focusing so much on our own emotional needs. And just the process of praising others, encouraging others, seeing that we can have some good influence on them, that is emotionally fulfilling ourselves. Try it. Yeah, try it. It's quite interesting. Okay. One last question.
Two more.
She's the boss.
perfect. Today, in the afternoon before I came, my daughter, 4 years old, she told me that one boy pushed her and I asked her, what you mean? And she said, no, I didn't, because I'm a good girl, Mom. So I was like, oh, okay, you know, I was like, oh, yes, just tell to beat her, and that's okay. But after I heard what she just told, I was like, well, what should I tell to my daughter, you know, when she thinks, like, I'm a good girl now, like, I have to be a good girl.
Mm-hmm. Yes, being a good girl is something that a lot of us were taught to be, you know. And a good girl keeps her mouth closed, and she's meek, and she's sweet. And even if Donald Trump grabs you, I think you can be a good girl and stick up for yourself, too. Yeah? So, you know, you don't want to hate anybody. You don't want to push them back or do something mean. But you can state what somebody else did and that it made you feel uncomfortable and it wasn't appropriate. And you can still be a good girl and do that.
Yeah? So we will have this one question with me. So the question is about when our karma, bad or good, is ripening, can we create a condition to change it?
Okay, once karma, a certain karma, is in the process of ripening, we can't change it. Or once it has ripened, we can't change it. But karma that has not yet ripened, we can change. Yeah, it's kind of like breaking your leg. You can prevent breaking your leg, but once you've broken it, you can't unbreak it. But you can go and get medical treatment and recover from it. Okay? So the whole idea is, if you use the example of a seed, once a seed has sprouted, you can't make it become a seed again. Yeah? You have to deal with the sprout that's happening. Okay? But the sprout is not yet a tree. So if you want it to become a tree, you have to add water and fertilizer. If you don't want it to grow because it's the sprout of a weed, then you have to pick it out, pull it out. So if we've created negative karma, some of it's starting to ripen, then we can do purification so that karma that hasn't yet ripened won't ripen. Okay? And of course, if we want things that are constructive to happen, then we need to nourish them by creating the causes and conditions. So let's sit quietly for a minute or two and just think about what you heard so that you can remember it and think about it some more after you leave and hopefully make it part of your life so that what you heard tonight can really improve your life and give you more balance, confidence. So just a very short meditation and then you'll dedicate. rejoice at all the merit that we created this evening, doing something useful, thinking about things that are worthwhile thinking about. So let's rejoice at the merit we created as an individual person, and rejoice at all the merit everybody here tonight created. Really let that, the thought of all that merit, fill your heart and gladden your heart. And then think of all the goodness in the world and rejoice at that as well. At all the actions of regular people helping each other, all the actions of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas benefiting others. And then let's dedicate all that merit so that all living beings can live at peace within themselves and also live peacefully with others. And let's dedicate it so that we can free our mind from ignorance, anger, clinging attachment, and other defilements. And really bring forth all of our incredible potential. To really open our heart and love all beings, have compassion for all beings. Develop the wisdom that understands reality. Let's dedicate for all that, not only for ourselves, but for everybody. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi Mind not yet born.